for antiwar.com and Chaos Radio 95.9 in Austin, Texas. I'm Scott Horton. This is Anti-War Radio. That's some Motorhead to get you started off today. Good morning to you. It's Anti-War Radio on Radio Chaos 95.9 in Austin, Texas. I'm Scott Horton. Thanks for tuning in. The website's antiwar.com and antiwar.com/radio for all the interview archives of myself and the great Charles Goyette out of Phoenix, Arizona. My own websites are thestressblog.com and scotthortonshow.com, although for some reason that I could not possibly explain to you because I don't know. They're always broken. They never work right. I got a webmaster, but he must be really busy doing something else or something, because stress is always broken these days. We even moved from one server to another, and stress is still broken. So I don't know what's going on there, but should be working again pretty soon, and that is thestressblog.com and scotthortonshow.com. We've got tons of great anti-government propaganda for the back of your car at libertystickers.com. My old sticker company I no longer own, but I still make up bumper stickers for them all the time. And, yeah, well, you should buy them. Not everybody can have a radio show, but everybody can say bad things about John McCain to strangers in traffic. Yeah. Great anti-Bush section. Great anti-war section. Great election 08 section. Check out libertystickers.com for that. And, I guess if you want to be my friend, you could do so by way of MySpace and Facebook, too. Don't leave any websites out I should have mentioned. I guess not. Antiwar.com, that's the most important thing for you to know. Tonight at 8 o'clock on at the Rudemeyer Coffee House on South Congress. There's Ron Paul something or other. The Ron Paul Ball, Liberty something. And one of Ron Paul's sons is supposed to be there speaking. And Jack Blood, radio show host from GCN, is going to be emceeing the thing. And when I spoke to him a week ago, he said he wanted me to come out and talk. He wanted me to give a speech at the thing. But I don't see my name on the list, so I don't know if that's still on or not. I have no idea what I'll talk about if I am actually asked to speak. But anyway, I'll be there tonight. That's 8 o'clock at the Rudemeyer Coffee House. If anybody wants to turn out and celebrate the Ron Paul Revolution, you know, give your humble host a handshake or some such thing, I'll be out there tonight, 8 o'clock, at the Rudemeyer Coffee House on South Congress. It's right there behind Exposé. So let's see, if I remember my radio ads, that's 3216 South Congress, right? And they call it out like a football play. 3216 South Congress, Titty Bar. All right behind the Titty Bar. Rudemeyer Hippie Coffee House, the Ron Paul Revolution Ball, or something like that. Narrated, hosted, emceed by Jack Blood, and perhaps including a speech about something by me. Wouldn't that be cool? All right, so let's talk about Ron Paul. Ron Paul's cool. Ron Paul, I think, is probably the best presidential candidate this country's ever had, or at least since Grover Cleveland. And in fact, I think Grover Cleveland had some problems. I try to remember. It's been so long since the Grover Cleveland days. It's been so long since I even read about Grover Cleveland. I don't even really remember. But anyway, Ron Paul is the greatest congressman in my lifetime, no doubt about that. He puts the entire House and Senate to shame with his voting record. Every Democrat, every Republican, 434 in the House, 100 in the Senate, he puts them to shame with his consistent dedication to his oath of office, for starters, and his belief in the principles of individual liberty. And that's why he's the anti-war Republican. It's not because he's a hippie. It's not because he's a wimp. It's because he has principles. And he's smart. And so when people say things like, yeah, we're going to take the Marine Corps and we're going to rearrange the Middle East to where it's great and everybody's our friend after that, he applies principles, such as, for example, the lessons of Austrian economics, and says, that's not going to work. You know, funny little story, I'll try to make it quick. I met a guy the other day who was a former Army officer or sergeant or something at the Air Force Base. Was it an Army base in Anniston, Alabama? You might be familiar with this. Hey, maybe I can base a speech off of this somehow tonight. He's telling me the story about how they're destroying chemical weapons there at Anniston, Alabama. You've heard of this, right? They have the incinerator there at this Army base, and they're in charge of destroying old chemical weapons stockpiles there. And this guy was telling me he was doing a drill. And there's a bunch of civilians who operate the incinerator machine to get rid of the chemical weapons. And then you have the Army guys whose job it is to correct or you know, to protect them. So they have orders to do a drill. They're going to do a drill. You know, this is how we would react if Al-Qaeda terrorists came to blow up the chemical weapons incinerator in Anniston, Alabama. And so these guys know it's a drill. They're Army soldiers. They're on a base in Anniston, Alabama. They know it's a drill. But nobody told the civilians. So when the civilians saw the play actor with the bomb strapped around his chest, they called it in as though it was a real attack. And then so what did the Army guys do? Did they say, well, no, we already have our instructions, which is this is a drill today, and whoever called this in as a real attack just must not understand that, no, there's not a real Al-Qaeda suicider bomber at the Army base in Anniston, Alabama. But what do? They acted as though it was real. What? Some idiot civilian who doesn't know we're doing a drill today called it in scared? Well, everybody lock and load. And so the Army guys locked and loaded their M16s, surrounded the building, which is full of civilians, and damn near killed a bunch of people. Came really close. Everybody's got, you know, their fingers on triggers. And then finally someone comes in screaming and yelling, "What the hell are you idiots doing?" And the way he described it, a couple of shots were fired. Luckily, no one was hurt. And you're telling me that these jackasses are going to go to the Middle East and reorder it? They're going to go spread democracy and change Arab society from a tribal way of doing things to what? Life, liberty, and property? These idiots who almost shot each other all to death during a training exercise in Anniston, Alabama, the last place on earth you would find an Al-Qaeda terrorist, dude, on the day of a training exercise. My God. Harry Brown, you say, oh, the military, well, they're the post office in fatigues. I repeated that one and someone told me, nobody understands that. What does that mean? Well, that means, isn't everybody at the post office an absolute idiot? And don't you have to stand there in line five times as long as you do to receive any other service in life? Don't you have to wait in line at the post office 10 times longer than to get a sandwich made at Thundercloud? Yes, you do. Why? It's a government agency. They make their money off the taxpayer, not from pleasing their customer. Therefore, they have no economic incentive to get things right. That's why the post office sucks, and that's why the Marine Corps sucks too. That's why the Army sucks too. Because the people doing the paying aren't the ones doing the hiring and firing. That's why John McCain made, Rear Admiral or whatever the hell he was. Because those paying for his service were not the ones in charge of his hiring and firing. And, you know, there really is a lesson here for John McCain, too. John McCain, now, again, the Republican front runner, has never had a job in his entire life. Do you know that? No one whose money is actually going to John McCain has ever had the opportunity to hire or fire him. No, John McCain has been a job holder his entire life. He's worked for the government his entire life. He has never, ever engaged in mutually beneficent exchange with anyone else other than on the customer end. And even then, I'm sure he has someone else to do all his shopping for him. John McCain has never had to please a customer, or for that matter, even a real boss, in his entire life. And you know what the lesson he's taken from that is? That to work for the private sector is evil, is embarrassing, is somehow dirty. That is why you will hear John McCain directly denounce the profit motive every chance he gets. Well, I've never worked in the private sector. I've had government jobs my entire life where you people have all been forced at gunpoint to pay me whether you like me or not. My entire life, because I'm dedicated to service, not like those greedy, evil people in the private sector who operate for profit. Ew, dirty, yucky profit. I have a question for John McCain and John McCain's supporters out there. More directly for John McCain. Mr. McCain, why? Why did you drop all those incendiary bombs on all those North Vietnamese communists back in the day when you were committing all your war crimes before you got captured and tortured? Why were you bombing the North Vietnamese when you agree with them on everything? Why is it, John McCain, that you share the North Vietnamese's former view, apparently they're capitalists now, but their former view on profit? Why is it that you think, Mr. McCain, that every individual born in America exists to serve the state At the same time, you're dropping bombs on the North Vietnamese for believing the very same thing as you. You commie rat. John McCain, commie rat. And the funny thing is, he's not even a neocon. He never was a Trotskyite. He's the son of an admiral. He's a third generation government employee. That's what he is. That's called service. Service with honor, not for that dirty profit motive, which happens to provide human beings with virtually all goods and services they enjoy in the world. The evil, disgusting profit motive, which, to my understanding, I would have thought, I guess, the Republican Party, don't they believe that it's businessmen interested in the profit motive who provide their support for their Republican Party? Is the Republican Party now nothing but the party of people who worship cops and soldiers? Former government employees and current ones? Is that what the GOP is now? John McCain, for intents and purposes, is saying, if you run a business where, say, I don't know, you provide goods and services to people in a mutually beneficent pattern of exchanges and get to keep a little bit more than what you put into the company every month, he doesn't want you. That's dirty and despicable. And you should have heard him last night. I don't have the clip here, but you can go watch it on YouTube. Where he attacked Mitt Romney, who's an investment banker, and listen, I'm not Romney's defender here, but I am a defender of liberty. Here's Romney is an investment banker whose investment bank is, you know, part owner in God knows what number of companies. He's a very successful businessman. I don't know if he was born rich or earned it himself or what, but because I don't really give a rat's ass about Mitt Romney either way. But John McCain accused Mitt Romney of running companies where people lost their jobs. Oh my God! Mitt Romney was the head of a gigantic company where people lost their jobs sometimes. My God! What does John McCain think? That people create companies just to provide jobs for people? That they're supposed to, what, continue employing people to the point that they bankrupt their company and go out of business and everybody loses their job? Or is John McCain's government employee for three generations brain even capable of understanding for a moment, you know, what it means to run a business? What it means to be an employer or an employee? Again, John McCain never in his entire life has he worked for anyone who was paying him and had the power to hire and fire him? No, you have been paying John McCain your whole life, and you don't have the power to hire and fire him. And you never did. Oh, Mitt Romney. You know, his investment firm is a major shareholder in the Marriott hotel chain. Did you hear that one time Marriott had to lay off some workers? Oh, well, that Mitt Romney's the devil. What do you mean that everybody who ever worked for Marriott doesn't still work for Marriott? Wow, John McCain, that's a hell of an accusation. You commie rat. You freedom and profit motive hating commie. Pinko. Again, here's a man who committed war crimes, who dropped high explosives on women and children from the air for the crime of them believing in communism, just like he believes. For the crime of believing that the individual exists to serve the state, just like he believes. Just like he was serving as he was bombing them. And this is the lesson of, you know, 5 years of torture. In the Hanoi Hilton, is that everybody ought to have to be tortured like me. Everybody ought to have to serve their country like me. Everybody ought to have to drop incendiary bombs on women and children and then be tortured for it for 6 years. And then they'll really know what it means to serve their country. We have a real problem in this society, I think. It's not just John McCain. It's this whole society where we can no longer differentiate between a victim and a hero. What's heroic about John McCain? The fact that he was kidnapped and tortured, or captured and tortured. It's not that he firebombed women and children from the air. That's not heroic. What's heroic about him? That he was a victim in a POW camp. That's what makes him a hero. That he was a victim. But here, I was under the impression that those were different things with different definitions. And that somebody who is a victim or a survivor is what they are, but they're not necessarily a hero just because they lived through something. A hero is someone who, you know, deliberately sacrifices for the good of someone else. And in what way has John McCain bettered the life of anyone ever? He hasn't. He hasn't. And John McCain, and let's get this right, all you John McCain voters out there, he believes that he owns you. And he believes that he owns your children. And he knows that if he's the president, he's going to have more wars, and he's going to force you and your children to work for him. He'll be like the reverse Abraham Lincoln, reinstating slavery all across the land. And Pat Buchanan had it right on MSNBC the other day. Here's a guy who's an admiral's son. Here's a guy who spent his entire life talking about how great he is because he's never held a private sector job. Because all he knows is about killing people for the state. Let me tell you something. I've been involved in every single foreign policy catastrophe for the last 20 years. Now, does anybody think that this guy is going to be anything but a war president? Let me give you some straight talk. There's going to be more wars. Yeah, no shit. Hey, listen, everybody. John McCain quit lying for a moment. Holy crap. John McCain quit lying for a moment to say, I promise you, more war. And anybody who votes for John McCain and thinks that that's not what you're going to get, well, you're an idiot. And I hope it's you and I hope it's your family that gets drafted then. If you're too lazy and stupid to do 5 seconds of research on John McCain to find out what a fascist he is. I mean, it's not hard. Just Google John McCain and read for about 5 minutes and you will see that he believes that he owns you. And he believes that you were born as a little bitty baby screaming and pissing on yourself. You owed your life to the state. Not that the state created you, but might as well have. You owe service. You have to give something back. Because nothing you have is something you earned. No, no, no. You have it because we all collectively gave it to you by way of government somehow. You might not remember it, but really, that's where you got whatever it is you got. And so, therefore, you have to give something back. You have to serve your country. You have to work for free, unsullied by that sickening and dirty profit motive. Yeah. In a way, I can't wait. In a way, I can't wait to see all you people vote for John McCain, to make John McCain the president, and then I can't wait to see you all drafted and then killed in his wars. Not that you would necessarily deserve it, but, you know, it would be pretty easy to avoid. All you would have to do is know the first thing about the man you're casting your vote for. And, you know, since anybody can go down to the local sandwich shop and have access to unlimited information about everything and anyone on Earth at their fingertips at light speed, it doesn't seem like anybody's got an excuse. I'd hate to see people vote for John McCain and then their sons have to die over it. That's not fair. You know, vote for your son to get drafted and killed? What if he's not an idiot like you? What if he doesn't want to be drafted and killed? I think that the rule is anybody who votes for McCain has to go join McCain's army and go die, you know, securing his fantasy or whatever tangible thing he invents in his fantasy over there in the Middle East. But what about the rest of us? We all have to pay for this, too. We're going to get our kids conscripted, too. It's going to really suck. But, you know, there you go. I read something said everybody a year ago got really sick of John McCain and realized what a scumbag he is, and he just dropped like a stone. And then everybody went, ah, Giuliani. Then they got to know Giuliani, and they went, ugh. Then they, oh, good, Fred Thompson. Then they got to know Fred Thompson. They went, oh, man. Then they got to know Mike Huckabee. Oh, well, forget him. Mitt Romney, geez, he might be talking. No, we don't like Romney. And now here they are back at McCain again. I wonder whether he'll be able to keep people from remembering why it is they hate him so much before Super Tuesday. And, you know, Lord have mercy, here I am rooting for the Rockefeller Republican. That's really not true. Really, I'm rooting for the LouRockwell.com Republican, Ron Paul. But between McCain and Romney, Romney is wrong about everything. We'll talk about that here in a minute. Romney is a sicko. Romney's got real problems. He's a liar. He's a shyster. He puts way too much goop in his hair. And I don't like him one bit. But he's not as dangerous as John McCain, the psychopath. John McCain, the commie rat, who believes that you were born owing your life to the government as though this was North Vietnam or something. I mean, he might have lost his war, but I'm not sure why he had to bring it all home for the rest of us. Anyway, here's Ron Paul's two best answers from the debate last night.
Paul, what makes you capable of being leader both on the economy
okay.
and the military?
The Constitution is very clear that the president's commander-in-chief of the military, but the president's not the commander-in-chief of the economy or of the people. And when we get asked questions like, how are you going to manage the economy, it's a reflection of conventional wisdom, but of a lot of lack of understanding of how the economy works. The president's not supposed to manage and run the economy. The people are supposed to do this. The government's supposed to give them sound money, low taxes, less regulations. The people are supposed to run it. But here we're assuming that the president's supposed to run the economy. We're not supposed to manage. We're not supposed to manage the
people. What role do you think the federal government should have in, I mean, does the federal government, in your opinion, have a role in stimulating the economy?
Yes, by lower taxes and less regulations. They could do a whole lot by having sound money where we don't print the money out of thin air. That causes the business cycle. That causes your bubbles. We're always dealing with the symptoms and the disease and never saying, how did this come about? You know, it comes about because we have a Federal Reserve that creates money and credit out of thin air. There's a lot of malinvestment. That's the most important thing to understand about the inflation of the monetary system, is the malinvestment. Then later on, people suffer, you wipe out a middle class. But the evil of it all is the vehicle for financing wars that we shouldn't be in and a welfare state that we shouldn't be doing. So, yes, we have a role to play, but it's a negative role. We want the people to be free. We don't want to manage the people and tell them how to live. And we need a commander-in-chief. But the most important thing on it as a commander-in-chief is not moving troops around as much as it is having a wise foreign policy that doesn't get us involved in so many things, and we get trapped and we linger year after year. We've been doing this for so long. Yep. And I like President Bush's argument that we have a humble foreign policy when he ran in 2000, and that we not be the policeman of the world.
Governor Huckabee.
All right, so there's Ron Paul rocking him. Commander-in-Chief of the Army and the Navy when called into the actual service of the United States. Not Commander-in-Chief of everyone all the time. The office John McCain's running for. And let's see, here's another.
Congressman Paul, 61% of Americans think there's a recession already. 61% of Americans say there's already a recession. Are we better off than we were?
No, we're not better off. We're worse off, but it's partially this administration's fault, but it's the Congress. But it also involves an economic system that we've had for a long time, and a monetary system that we've had, and a foreign policy that's coming to an end, and we have to admit this. You know, the Republicans were elected in 1994 to change the direction of the country because people sensed there was something wrong. We were going the wrong direction, but we didn't do anything. In the year 2000, we did also. We were elected in the year 2000 to have a humble foreign policy and not police the world, yet What are we doing now? We're bogged down in another war. We're bankrupting our country. And we have an empire that we're trying to defend. It costs us $1 trillion a year. And the standard of living is going down today. But it's going down, and the middle class is hurting because of the monetary policy. When you destroy a currency, the middle class gets wiped out. Poor countries don't even have middle classes. We used to have one, and they're on the ropes right now. But it has to do with a fiscal policy, monetary policy, and foreign policy of way too much spending. But it took a lot of years for us to get here. The people in this country have been begging for a change in direction, and they haven't had it. It's time we gave it to them.
We've got our country faces. Do you agree with Governor Schwarzenegger on this one?
Yes, I think California should do what they want, and we all recognize that. But one thing that hasn't been emphasized here that should be emphasized when we're dealing with the environment and gas house, greenhouse gases, is property rights. We neglected during the Industrial Revolution property rights, and governments and big corporations got together and colluded, and that's what has to be reversed. You have to emphasize the property rights. But I would like to take 1 minute, since I didn't get a chance to answer this discussion on conservative versus liberal.
You're going to have another opportunity to do that. I promise you, coming up in like 2 minutes or two questions. I just want to go right now to Janet Hook for a question to her, Governor Huckabee.
Economic stimulus.
Well, you know, the governor says that you have to borrow for a handout of a check from the Chinese. Where are you going to get the money to build the highway? Same old thing. You know, we have a foreign policy where we blow up bridges overseas. And then we tax the people to go over and rebuild the bridges overseas, and our bridges are falling down, and our infrastructure is falling down. So yes, this money should be spent back here at home. We have a $1 trillion foreign operation to operate our empire. That's where the money is. You can't keep borrowing from China. You can't keep printing the money. We have to cut some spending. That's what nobody here talks about. Where do you cut spending if you want to spend some money? We need lower taxes, less regulations, and we need to free up the market. We can't let expect the government to do everything. We have to have faith and confidence that the market works, but you can't do any of that unless you look at the monetary system.
Yes or no, Congressman Paul, was Senator Day O'Connor the right choice?
I wouldn't have appointed her because I would have looked for somebody that I would have seen as a much stricter constitutionalist.
Senator McCain? I want to go Jim VandeHei with a question for, I believe, Congressman Paul.
Congressman Paul.
You gotta love the way Anderson Cooper ran this debate. I would have preferred to have, Governor Romney, 7 minutes for your answer, please. Go ahead.
This comes from Jay Majumdar from Roswell, Georgia, and he wants to know if you agree with Senator McCain's statement that the United States might need to have U.S. troops in Iraq for as long as even 100 years.
I don't even think they should have gone. So keeping them for 100 years, where's the money going to come from? You know, the country's in bankruptcy, and when I listen to this argument, I mean, I find it rather silly because they're arguing technicalities of a policy they both agree with. They agreed going in, agreed for staying how many years, and these are technicalities. We should be debating foreign policy, whether we should have interventionism or non-interventionism, whether we should be defending this country or whether we should be the policemen of the world, whether we should be, you know, running our empire or not, and how are we going to have guns and butter? You know, the 70s were horrible because we paid for the guns and butters of the 60s. Now we're doing the same thing, and nobody even seems to care. The dollar's crashing, and you're talking about these technicalities about who said what, when? I mean, in 1952, we Republicans were elected to stop the war in Korea. 1968, we were elected to stop the war in Vietnam. And tragically, we didn't stop it very fast. 30,000 more men died. So when I talk about these long-term stays, I think, how many men are you willing to let die for this? For something that has nothing to do with our national security. There were no Al-Qaeda there, had nothing to do with 9/11, and there was no threat to our national security. They never committed aggression. It's unconstitutional. It's an undeclared war. And we have these silly arguments going on about who said what when. I think it's time to debate foreign policy and why we don't follow the Constitution and only go to war with a declaration of war.
Governor Huckabee, the idea of a 100-year involvement of the U.S., the idea of a 100-year involvement, Congressman Paul.
I hope
Paul,
that some people will judge me by those that are supporting me.
Congressman Paul, what makes you capable of being leader both on the economy and the military?
The Constitution is very clear that the president's commander-in-chief of the military, but the president's not the commander-in-chief of the economy or of the people. And when we get asked questions like, how are you going to manage the economy, it's a reflection of conventional wisdom, but of a lot of lack of understanding of how the economy works. The president's not supposed to manage and run the economy. The people are supposed to do this. The government's supposed to give them sound money, low taxes, less regulations. The people are supposed to run it. But here we're assuming that the president's supposed to run the economy. We're not supposed to manage.
Does the federal government, in your opinion, have a role in stimulating the economy?
Yes, by lower taxes, less regulations. They could do a whole lot by having sound money where we don't print the money out of thin air. That causes the business cycle. That causes your bubbles. We're always dealing with the symptoms and the disease and never saying, how did this come about? You know, it comes about because we have a Federal Reserve that creates money and credit out of thin air. There's a lot of malinvestment. That's the most important thing to understand about the inflation of the monetary system, is the malinvestment. Then later on, people suffer, and you wipe out a middle class. The evil of it all is the vehicle for financing wars that we shouldn't be in and a welfare state that we shouldn't be doing. So, yes, we have a role to play, but it's a negative role. We want the people to be free. We don't want to manage the people and tell them how to live. And we need a commander-in-chief. But the most important thing on it as a commander-in-chief is not moving troops around as much as it is having a wise foreign policy that doesn't get us involved in so many things. And we get trapped and we linger year after year. We've been doing this for so long. Yep. And I like President Bush's argument that we have a humble foreign policy when he ran in 2000 and that we not be the policeman of the world. I supported Ronald Reagan in 1976, and there were only four members of Congress that did, also in 1980. Ronald Reagan came and campaigned for me in 1978. I'm not sure exactly what he would do right now, but I do know that he was very sympathetic to the gold standard, and he told me personally that no great nation that went off the gold standard ever remained great. And he was very, very serious about that. So he had a sound understanding about monetary policy. And for that reason, I would say look to Ronald Reagan's ideas on money, because he, too, was concerned about runaway inflation and what it does to a country when you ruin the currency. And that's what's happening today. The dollar is going down, and our country is going to be on the ropes if we don't reverse that trend.
All right, so there you go, folks. All the best parts of the debate last night. The rest of it was just Romney and McCain going back and forth about who's a worse warmonger. And, you know, Romney, you can't win that one, pal. I mean, you might have hired Liz Cheney to be your senior foreign policy advisor, but you could never out-warmonger John, let's start a war with Russia, McCain. You could never out-warmonger a warmonger like McCain. What do you know about service? Service. You work for profit. You own a company that actually makes money. You're evil, Mitt Romney. What do you know about service? What do you know about killing people from the air like me? You could never out-warmonger John McCain, who, if elected, very well could be the last president of the United States. Who has it within his capacity to, you know, blow up the world and probably even push Earth out of its proper orbit. The number of hydrogen bombs he could set off. It's his destiny, man. He's got to serve. Service. You were born to serve. And if your communist service means your job is killing communists, then, you know, that's good too. I don't know. The pleasures of being John McCain. What a riot it must have been for him to be a communist flying an A-4 dropping bombs on communists. What's the matter with them? Thinking that they were born owing their lives to the state. Who do they think they are? John McCain? Maybe he wasn't bombing them because they were communists. Maybe he was just bombing them because they were brown. Or because, you know, their communism was standing in the way of our country's communism, which is trying to steal all their tungsten. You don't want to have to pay a market price for tungsten, do you?
We're online, and a lot of people were writing and saying they wanted to hear more from you. So this is an opportunity for them to hear more from you right now. Now, the debate started off this evening with a question about, are we better off now than we were 8 years ago? You said no, and you really talked about the middle class plight.
Right, and I'm always talking about monetary policy. And the middle class is wiped out when you ruin a currency. So we're not as well off as we were. But it's not just this administration. We've had a flawed monetary system since the 1913, since we found our Federal Reserve. But what I'm afraid is if we continue this, we won't have a middle class. We're going to have a lot of poor and a lot of rich people. And this is characteristic of what happens when you destroy a currency. And you do that to pay for big government because you don't have to tax and you can't borrow anymore. So they just print the money, which is, a lot of people don't realize that, but it's a foolish system and it's very dangerous and I'm trying to stop it.
With the Federal Reserve reducing interest rates and with the U.S. dollar sliding against other currencies, how would you fix what's going on right now?
Reserve out of it. Why do we assume the Federal Reserve has to fix interest rates? We believe in free enterprise except in money. We say, oh, the Federal Reserve has to set interest rates. And the stock market wants low interest rates. So the stocks went up a little bit today, but then they went down again. But guess what? The dollar went down and gold went up because when you lower interest rates, you can only do that by printing more money. So they're sending the wrong signal. And they're caught. If they don't print the money, the stock market's down. If they do print the money, the dollar goes down. And that's why we have to have sound money. We have to get the central bank out of central economic planning.
Now, part of your platform is advocating for a fair tax. I think that's a very foreign concept to a lot of people. Boil it down to just a couple of concepts so people can understand why you believe a fair tax is the way to go.
I don't advocate the fair tax. I'm for no tax. I'm for getting rid of the income tax, which the fair tax people also want. Mm-hmm. But I want to cut the spending so much that you don't have to have a sales tax. That's what the fair tax is. But it's not fair for everybody, so that's why I don't push it. But I emphasize cutting spending. That's why I talk about this trillion-dollar empire that we're operating around the world. And we can't do it for much longer. And that's why I want to cut so much spending. We don't have an income tax. If we didn't have an income tax today, we'd still have as much revenues as we had 10 years ago. But you'd have to cut. If you just got rid of the income tax, your deficit would go up. That's why I want to cut a lot of spending.
Well, when talking about money, you are competing with candidates right now who have much more money than you for the campaign trail. So how do you keep going?
Well, right now, I think only Governor Romney has more money because we've been very good at raising money. Where we get shortchanged so often is at the debates and the news in the evening. We don't get time there like the others get. But we have probably a bigger presence than all the others put together on the Internet.
Well, let me ask you about that. How have you been able to generate so much money online, more than any other candidate? I mean, millions of dollars.
You know, it isn't so much I generate it as much as when the people who look at the Internet see what I'm doing and read my platform, they generate it. They have days where, oh, let's all send money in on such and such day. But that's all self-generated, and they do that at the grassroots. And they're enthusiastic about what I talk about, getting out of the war, a sound currency, no income tax, reduced spending, balanced budgets. And all of a sudden, people, wow, they wake up and they said, we really haven't heard that. And they believe it when I talk about it. Somewhat at other times, I hear people talk a little bit this way, but they haven't done anything about it. Then they go and check my voting record. And they said, wow, he voted this way for 20 years.
Let's talk about the war in Iraq for a moment. There was that pretty feisty exchange between John McCain and Mitt Romney this evening, squabbling. Mike Huckabee said he wasn't there to umpire a baseball session. What did you think of that exchange?
Well, I accused him of nitpicking, you know, and not dealing with the real substance. The real substance is foreign policy. Should we be the policemen of the world? Should we be involved in the internal affairs of other countries? And my answer is no. That's what the founder said. Don't do it. There's no authority for it. It's bankrupting us. And we fight these no-win wars. We don't declare the wars. I said, we're supposed to obey the Constitution. And it isn't this nitpicking, this silly argument. I called it a silly argument about who said what, when, and I couldn't figure out what they were talking about because they should be dealing, how did we get in this mess? How did we get in the mess in Korea and Vietnam and now in the Persian Gulf? And it's bankrupting our country. That's why we have to change our foreign policy, not just tinker around on the edges about, are you going to bring the troops home in 6 months or 6 years or 100 years? We need to change. Our foreign policy should be defending this country. And the real great thing about the policy I'm talking about, it eliminates the cause of a threat of terrorism, because when we invade countries, this
makes people mad. Mm-hmm. If somebody invaded us, we'd be pretty upset. So I say we would be much safer if we had the foreign policy of the founders of this country.
With the pool of candidates dwindling today, with Rudy Giuliani dropping out, ending his bid for the White House, other people are wondering when maybe Mike Huckabee or Ron Paul will end their ambitions.
Well, I've told my supporters, I say, you know, if you're still wanting to campaign and you're still sending money, I'm going to stay there. And they are still cheering pretty loud. So they want this campaign to go because they consider it very, very serious business. And we need to reverse the trend in this country. We need to go toward more freedom and the Constitution and less of this interference in other people's lives over the seas, in the personal lives of people. I don't want to interfere in people's personal lives. As I said in the debates, I don't think the president's supposed to run the economy. We're supposed to provide an environment where the people run the economy. So this is quite different. The people are excited about this, and that's why I suspect they're going to continue to send me money.
You mentioned invading people's personal lives. I want to kind of do that right now. I want to ask you just a personal question. It's a demanding schedule to keep up, I'm sure. How do you keep up with the campaigning and with the debates and crisscrossing the country?
Well, sometimes I complain a lot and get it off my chest. But, no, it is tedious. Sometimes I'm up a lot of hours, and I miss getting my exercise and all. But I'd have to believe in what I'm doing in order to put this effort out, and I believe it's worthwhile. And when I meet the supporters who are enthusiastic and really say, yes, we need you out there, then it isn't too difficult.
Ron Paul, pleasure. Thank you very much for your time. Again, presidential candidate. Just wrapping up the final GOP debate before the Super Tuesday. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Ron Paul. Thank you indeed. And you know what? You're right. We do want you to stay in there. At least I do, and I'm sure I'm speaking for at least one other person, and that makes we. Hell yeah, we want you to stay in there. This is the greatest Jeffersonian individual liberty speaking tour in the history of America. And, you know, I'm even, as crazy as it sounds, somewhat a believer in the idea that if Ron Paul's campaign people could just get some really good TV ads together, if he could get a little bit of debate coaching, and if he would put out some press releases attacking John McCain all day, every day, for his positions, you know, rather than this or that soundbite, then, you know, I don't know why he shouldn't be able to win. John McCain has got a glass jaw, you know, like Glass Jaw Joe from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. He ought to be easy to take out. And Romney as well. Huckabee cannot win in any state outside of the South, and he couldn't even win in South Carolina. He can't win in the West. He can't win in the Northeast. He can't win in the Midwest. So, you know, I understand he at least won Iowa, and Ron Paul hadn't won anything yet. He's got a couple of second places. But Mitt Romney has flip-flopped on every issue under the sun. You know, he talks about, I'm the only one up here with any private experience in the private economy. Not true. Ron Paul ran a doctor's office for decades, delivered 4,000 babies in the private sector. Delivered them for free or on a sliding scale for the poor rather than accepting government Medicare and Medicaid. Wonder if any of the, you know, doctor concerns owned by Mitt Romney's investment company operate that way. Mitt Romney used to be for gun control, now he's not. Mitt Romney is proud of the fact that he passed Hillary Clinton-style fascist corporatist health care in Massachusetts. He's changed his mind on every position under the sun at least twice. He's carved out of polyurethane. He's a big fake, and everybody can tell. Like, Mitt Romney, I'd attack you on your position if I could remember what it is this week. And John McCain? Here's the line for Ron Paul, something to the effect of, Feingold and I are voting together, it's in opposition to things like the Patriot Act. When John McCain and Feingold vote together, it's to take your liberty away. When I vote with Ted Kennedy, it's against things like the Military Commissions Act. when John McCain votes with Ted Kennedy, it's to nationalize your child's education. And to, you know, put America under the Kyoto Protocol, which our president has unsigned and which our Senate has never ratified. But, you know, they want to put us under it anyway. Which, by the way, anyone in favor of that Kyoto Protocol, because somebody told you there was something green about it, you might do a Google search and read for 5 minutes. It shouldn't take you any longer than that to reject the entire premise of that treaty. Yeah, let's create a new currency of pollution credits. That sounds perfectly great. I can't even imagine for a moment what corruption might spawn from creating a new international currency in pollution. Jesus. Yeah. Here's another thing about Romney. I don't know, for those of you who were intelligent enough or just too busy that you missed the debate last night, you're better off. But, you know, they asked Romney, they asked Huckabee the Russia question, and his answer, I'm paraphrasing, was, I don't know anything at all about Russia or American relations with Russia, so my answer is not going to refer to the question at all, because I don't know anything about it. That's, you know, I'm paraphrasing. That was Huckabee's answer. And then they got to Romney. Of course, they didn't ask Ron Paul about Russia. He got skipped on that one. But they asked Mitt Romney, and Romney said Russia is going to take over the world with all their oil money. Really? Russia's going to take over the world? Here, I thought their entire society was falling apart. Here, I thought that the Russian Federation, such as it is at this point about as overextended as the Soviet Empire was compared to the strength of Moscow 20 years ago. Here, I thought Russia, for intents and purposes, is going to cease to exist in the next 50 to 75 years, as the hundreds of separate little ethnicities within the so-called Russian Federation break apart and go to war against each other. Anybody who believes Russia is going to take over the world is either a liar who doesn't really believe that but is just lying to you and wants you to believe that for some crazy reason, or they're an idiot. And, you know, Mitt Romney, I guess you flip a coin and you decide, but he's dead wrong when he tries to imply that somehow Russia is an aggressor state in the world that needs to be contained by the United States of America. In 1988, at least you could have made a case. In 2008, it's just not true. And then he talks about China is a terrible danger because of their mix of communism and capitalism. They still have a communist government, a Politburo, and authoritarian government there. And yet they have this Wild West capitalism, which those are the words of Mitt Romney, and the way he said it was, this is something to be terribly afraid of. That capitalism will rise up in China. And yet somehow Romney believes that the Politburo, that the communist government of China can remain the communist government of China in the middle of a Wild West capitalist boom. Which is just ridiculous. The power of private interests in China as compared to the power of the Politburo, you know, on whatever you do, your little line graph or whatever. The power of the people of China is on the rise, and the relative power of the government of China is on the steep decline. And they're not an aggressor state. What? He accuses them of what? Making deals with the Sudanese to buy their oil? Sounds like jealousy to me. That's what he cited as the danger of China. Oh yeah, China's really dangerous. They're buying oil from people. Oh, well fuck. We need to have a Republican warmonger president with Liz Cheney as a senior foreign policy advisor to keep us safe from that. My God, they're buying oil on the world market? Yeah, I'll keep my eye out for that. Yeah, I'm really scared. Yeah, China, they spend about a tenth of a percent of what America spends on our military every year. But yeah, they're a terrible threat because they're buying oil from the government there in Sudan. And then who's the third major power on the list? Well, I guess the fourth in Romney's list. It's America, Russia taking over the world, China taking over the world. And who's the fourth major power in the world? According to Governor Romney of Massachusetts, Al-Qaeda. Yes, that's right. Al-Qaeda is the global radical Islamic extremist caliphate that's going to take over the world if we don't stop. Yes, Al-Qaeda, which is in exile in Waziristan, which you can't even find on a map. It's so far from anything. Osama bin Laden, whose terrorist actions over the past 5.5 years have been reduced to podcasting from exile in the Hindu Kush. Yes, he's going to conquer the world with his Islamo-fascist caliphate. This man who is not friends with a single national government on earth is going to take us all over if we don't vote for Mitt Romney. Well, him and the Russians. Wow. I guess, you know, if you really wanted to do a full of shit contest and try to quantify the lies of these two bozos, McCain and Romney, it would be quite a contest. No, I don't know. I think if you had all of Dick Cheney's kids working for you, Mitt Romney, you still can't out-warmonger McCain. But you might be able to out-bullshit him. At least he's honest when he says his policy will be that at the end of his 8 years in office for America to still be occupying Iraq. And by then, Iran and probably, you know, Kazakhstan and who knows what. The Sudan. Oh, yeah, you want your grandson to die patrolling the Sahara Desert? You vote John McCain. You think John McCain's going to be the president and not invade North Africa? You dumb ass. You do that. You vote McCain, and then you watch as your son dies on patrol in Darfur. I was so happy the day my grandson was born. All I could think was, I'm going to give him to John McCain so John McCain can get him killed patrolling the Sudan. I heard that the Chinese are buying oil from them. Gotta be restrained. Lunatics. Here's John Derbyshire, the corner at thenationalreview.com. This is John Derbyshire. He's the pro-Ron Paul guy. I think David Fredesso was down there for a while, but I don't know what happened to him. Honestly, I don't read that much National Review, but, so here is, John Derbyshire making fun of, Catherine Jean Lopez, who's crying about the fact that John McCain won the debate last night with all of his denunciations of profit and his appeals to, communist state worship sentiment among those on the right. Derbyshire writes to her, "Oh, stop whining. So what if the likely GOP nominee believes in restraints on free speech, higher taxation, bigger government, open borders, and 100-year U.S. armies of occupation everywhere from Albania to Zimbabwe? Romney believes in those things, too. At least he does when he's in a room full of people that want him to. You already have a genuinely conservative candidate on offer." That's a link to Ron Paul. "He's just not slick enough for you. What? Has he positions you don't agree with? More than the other guys? Actually, I've heard very little complaining about Paul's positions. What I've heard mostly is, A, he's funny looking. Is he? B, he can't win. And C, he has a lot of icky supporters." Oh, that might be me. I've been sitting here calling John McCain a commie rat for the last hour straight. Although they seem to be calling McCain a commie rat, too, so maybe I'm not so icky. The answer to A is to put aside the New York Times style section for 5 minutes and think. The answer to B is that if conservatism is going to lose big in 2008 anyway, newsflash, it is, it should at least make a stand to inspire future generations. The answer to C is get in there and swell the ranks of non-icky Paul supporters, there are plenty of us, to drown out the nutsos. While you guys are crying into your light-blended cream frappuccinos, I'll be making a campaign donation to help Ron and Carol celebrate their 51st wedding anniversary Friday. Romney bot lost a big one. In the immortal words of Little Richard, boo, shriek, hoo, shriek, hoo, shriek, hoo. That's what I'm saying. That guy, Mitt Romney, is at least as bad of a liar. Or he's stupid enough that the things he says are lies, bad enough to put him on the same level as that bag of dirt, John McCain. And that's pretty bad. And by the way, thank you very much, John Derbyshire, for reminding me. I don't want to be specific here. I'm not the best at staying married myself. And I don't beat anybody over the head at for not being married or anything. I will beat Giuliani over the head for being married to his cousin and then breaking up with her live at a press conference with his mistress, who he'd been cheating on his wife, cousin, with all that time. I'll attack him for that. But, you know, he's a public figure. Whatever. But, you know, whatever. I'm not a church-going type. I broke my contract, and I'm glad I did. Others have contracts with spouses and break theirs. Fine. But Ron Paul, to his credit, I think he deserves credit. This is not to bash anyone who hadn't been able to pull this off, but this is to give credit where credit is due. Ron Paul is married to his high school sweetheart. They started dating at her Sweet 16 party. It was a Sadie Hawkins dance, which means the girls invite the boys. And Carol invited Ron to her Sweet 16 party, and they've been together ever since. And tomorrow is their 51st wedding anniversary, and it's the next money bomb. It's, trying to remember the name of the website. They have a website, 51years.com or some crap like that. I forgot. But anyway, tomorrow, Friday, the 1st of February, the 51st wedding anniversary of Dr. Ron Paul, they're trying to get 100,000 people to donate $51. Makes perfect sense. Remember when Rudy Giuliani held a campaign fundraiser where he asked everybody to give him $911? Ah. Well, this is sort of like that, only not so crass. I'm not sure what number wife John McCain is on, or, you know, whether he threw his previous wives in the garbage the way Rudy Giuliani did. But I do know that Ron Paul is the only man running for president who's been able to keep his oath to his wife for 51 years. And I think that that shows a hell of a lot of character. A hell of a lot of character. So, good for you, Ron, and, you know, I get paid on the 1st, hopefully. If my check gets here on time, you got my vote, and you got mine with $51, Mr. President. All right, folks, here's some music, and then we'll be back on Chaos Radio 95.9 in Austin, Texas, to do some anti-war radio for you. Here's another. I like this. listening. It's Mobb Deep, Chaos Radio.
As time goes by, and not for it, not. We in this together, son, your beef is mine. So long as the sun shines to light up the sky. We in this together, son, your beef is mine. As time goes by, and not for it, not. We in this together, son, your beef is mine. So long as the sun shines to light up the sky. We in this together, son, your beef is mine. Let me start from the beginning at the top of the list. Know I mean, half situation like this. Another war story from a thirsty young hustler. Won't trust her, I'd rather bust her. And leave you caught for the cops to discover. Well, I be vipping in the Range Rover. Hold you well like Liberace. You watch me while Jake's trying to knock me and lock me. But I be on the low sipping Asti Spumante. Niggas try to creep on the side of my teeth. Stuck the heat through the window, rock their ass to sleep. Over a three pack. It was a small thing, really, yeah. But keep letting them small things slide and be a failure. If I'm out of town, one of my crew will take care of you. The world is ours, and your team's inferior. You wanna bust caps, I get all up in your area. Kidnapping children make the situation scarier. Life is a gamble, we scramble for money. I might crack a smile, but ain't a damn thing funny. I'm caught up in the dirt where your hands get muddy. Plus the outcome turns out to be lovely. Got cheese in my pocket, hit off my main squeeze. Push back the sunroof, let the cold air breeze through the butter, soft leather upholstery. But mostly, keep the gag closely, cause niggas wanna toast
me. Hey yo, I gotta get mines, no matter what the consequences. Count on my blessings, add up my weapons. Cop out the gat and let my nines serve purpose. Sling, do my thing, organize thing service. Trying to make a meal is stress, you know the deal. So we sling grills, get your cap hill, cause everything is real. Cause I wanna chill, laid up in a jacuzzi. Sip a bubbly with my fingers on the Uzi. Try to infiltrate my fork, get caught dead up in New York. My brain is back with criminal thoughts. Get your life lost, never found again, my friend. Mission completed, watch you drop in less than 10. On my road to the riches, hitting snitches off with mad stitches. Your last rest, the place will be your ditch, kid. No one can stop me, try your style sloppy. You wanna be me, you're just an imitation copy. My theme is all about making the green, living up in luxury, pushing fat whips to live comfortably.
Time goes by, and not for an eye. We in this together, son, your beef is mine. So long as the sunshine can light up the sky. We in this together, son, your beef is
a
mine.
A drug dealer's dream, stash cream, keys on a triple beam, 500 that spell green, 95 nickel gleam, condominium, thug dressed like a gentleman, tailor-made ostrich, Chanel for my women friend, murdering, numbers on your head while I'm burglaring, shank is serving them, what's up to all my niggas swerving in New York metropolis, the bridge brings apocalypse, shoot at the clouds, feels like the holy beast is watching us, madman, my sanity is going like an hourglass, gun inside my bad hand, I slice trying to bag grams, I got hoes that used to milk you, niggas who could've killed you, it's down with my ill crew of psychos, Nas Escobar moving on your weak production, pumping corruption in the third world, we just bustin'.
Hold up bustin'. And analyze the wildcats, sling cracks, they swinging axe, the new routines, be my eyes blacks, playing corners, glancing all up in your cornea, cornea, seen cats snatch monies upon ya, but late night, candlelight, fiend with a crack right, it's only right, feeling higher than an airplane, right, word yo, I wanna get this money then blow, take my time, blast a nine if you're front, you go, sip beers, the German ones, hand my guns, the sons, Shaolin and Queensbridge, we robbing niggas for fun, but still, write my will, I tell my seeds and bill, Mahalia, sing a tale, but the real, we still kill,
it's what? Time goes by, and now for or not. We in this together, so your beef is mine. So long as the sun shines to light up the skies. We in this together, so your beef is mine. As time goes by, an eye for an eye. We in this together, so your beef is mine. So long as the sun shines to light up the skies. We in this together, so your beef is mine. It's mine.
Lay back. Word out. Just bless him with the bulletproof. More beef.
All right, now I got a lot of news to cover today in terms of American foreign policy and so forth here on Anti-War Radio for you. But first, I want to talk more about how much I hate John McCain and what a sicko, crazy, commie rat, psychopath, warmonger he is. Now, Matt Welch, I don't know him, But there's bad blood, apparently, you know, going on between him and Justin. They don't get along, Justin Raimondo at antiwar.com. And he's helped champion all this bullshit, trying to smear Ron Paul over a bunch of ridiculous old newsletters that he knows good and well Ron Paul didn't write and didn't condone. But anyway, so fuck Matt Welch, as far as I care. But he wrote this great thing about John McCain and what a sicko John McCain is. And I'm going to read it to you. Because I don't despise Matt Welch that much. I actually tried to get him on the show when this came out, and he didn't even return my email. I guess just because it said antiwar.com on it. Boy, those guys at Reason are just way too cool for me, dude, I guess. Matt Welch, McCain wants to be another Teddy Roosevelt. Oh, geez. This is from Saturday, December 2nd, 2006. You can read 1,000 profiles of GOP presidential frontrunner John McCain without encountering a single paragraph examining his core ideological philosophy. His career is filled with such distracting drama, torture at the Hanoi Hilton, noisy conversion to the campaign finance reform faith, political suicide on the Straight Talk Express. By the time you're done with the highlights and perhaps a few maverick anecdotes, time's up. People are forever filling in the blanks with their own political fantasies. Third-party candidate, John Kerry running mate, far-right warmonger, Republican in name only. But with the announcement that the popular Arizona senator has formed his presidential exploratory committee, it's time for our long national guessing game to end. Sifting through McCain's four best-selling books and nearly three decades of work on Capitol Hill, a distinct approach toward governance begins to emerge, and it's one that the electorate ought to be particularly worried about right now. McCain, it turns out, wants to restore your faith in the U.S. government by any means necessary, even if that requires thousands of more military deaths, national service for civilians, and federal micromanaging of innumerable private transactions. He'll kick down the doors of boardroom and bedroom, mixing Democrats' nanny state regulations with the GOP's red meat paternalism in a dangerous brew of government activism. And he's trying to accomplish this, in part, for reasons of self-realization. The first clue to McCain's philosophy lies in two seemingly irrelevant items of gossip. His father was a drunk, and his second wife battled addiction to pain pills. Neither would be worth mentioning, except for the fact that McCain's books and speeches are shot through with the language and sentiment of 12-step recovery, especially steps 1, admitting the problem, and 2, investing faith in a power greater than ourselves. Oh, God. Like many alcoholics who haven't quite made it to step 6, becoming entirely ready to have these defects removed, McCain is disarmingly talented at admitting his narcissistic flaws. In his 2002 book, Worth the Fighting For, the senator is constantly confessing his problems of selfishness, immaturity, ambition, and especially temper, though he also makes clear that his outbreaks of anger can be justifiable and even laudable when channeled into a cause greater than self-interest. A rebel without a cause is just a punk, he explains. Whatever you're called, rebel, unorthodox, nonconformist, radical, it's all self-indulgence. Without a good cause to give your life meaning. What is this higher power that ennobles McCain's crankiness? Just as it is for many soldiers, it's the belief that Americans, quote, were meant to transform history, and that sublimating the individual in the service of that common national cause is the wellspring of honor and purpose. But unlike most soldiers, McCain has been in a position to prod and even compel citizens to join his cause. Liberals and conservatives alike fail to truly reflect his views, McCain writes, because neither emphasizes the obligation of a free people to the nation. His main governmental inspiration is Teddy Roosevelt, the, quote, Eastern swell who became a man of the people, whose great accomplishment was, quote, to summon the American people to greatness. In Roosevelt's code, McCain writes approvingly, it was, quote, absolutely required that every loyal citizen take risks for the country's sake. This is an essentially militaristic view of citizenship, one that explains many of McCain's departures from partisan orthodoxy. Unlike traditional Republicans, he will gladly butt into the affairs of private industry if he perceives them to be undermining Americans' faith in government. Unlike Democrats, he thinks the executive branch generally needs more power, not less. Our greatness, he wrote in Worth the Fighting For, depends upon our patriotism, and our patriotism is hardly encouraged when we cannot take pride in the highest public institutions. So, because steroids might be damaging the faith of young baseball fans, drug testing becomes a, quote, transcendent issue, requiring threats of federal intervention unless pro sports leagues shape up. Hollywood's voluntary movie rating system, quote, a smokescreen to provide cover for immoral and unconscionable business practices. Ultimate fighting on Indian reservations? Barbaric and worthy of government pressure on cable TV companies. Negative political ads by citizen groups, quote, they do little to further beneficial debate and healthy political dialogue, end quote, and so must be banned for 60 days before an election if they mention a candidate by name. If his issues line up with yours, and if you're not overly concerned by an activist federal government, McCain can be a great and sympathetic ally. But chances are he will eventually see a grave national threat in what you consider harmless, or he'll prescribe a remedy that you consider unconscionable. Nowhere is that more evident than in his ideas about the Iraq War. McCain has been banging the drum from nearly day one to put more boots on the ground in Iraq. Quote, there are a lot of things we can do to salvage this, he said on Meet the Press on November 12, 2006, but they all require the presence of additional troops. McCain is more inclined to start wars and increase troop levels than George W. Bush or Bill Clinton. He has supported every U.S. military intervention of the last two decades, urged both presidents to rattle their sabers louder over North Korea and Iran, lamented the Pentagon's failure to intervene in Darfur and Rwanda, and supported a general policy of rogue state rollback. He's a fan of Roosevelt's Monroe Doctrine on steroids, stick-wielding in Latin America, and, like Bush, he thinks too much multilateralism can screw up a perfectly good war. The price of all this war-making in money and manpower would be staggering. It's hard to imagine without a draft. McCain has long been a fan of mandatory national service at the least. But the costs to his political ambitions may be even greater. The nation is in no mood for the war we've got now, let alone a doubling down on Iraq and ramped up unilateralist tough talk in the Middle East. The trend lines of public opinion on these counts are not pointing in McCain's direction. One of the many charming confessions in Worth the Fighting For is McCain's complaint that the man he replaced in the Senate, Republican icon Barry Goldwater, was, quote, never as affectionate as I would have liked. Small wonder. Goldwater, a man who seemed to emanate from Arizona's dust, was the paragon of limited government, believing to his core that the Fed shouldn't tell you how to run a business or whom you can sleep with. McCain, on the other hand, is a third-generation D.C. insider who carpet-bagged his way into office, believing to his core that, quote, national pride will not survive the people's contempt for government. So it ought to do more contemptible things, of course. On November 7th, those conflicting worldviews collided when Arizonans voted on whether to outlaw gay marriage. McCain campaigned in favor of the ban in the name of preserving the sanctity of heterosexual unions. His exhortations went down to a surprising defeat, not one suspects, for the last time. Yeah, well, here's hoping that's right, Matt Welch, editor of Reason Magazine. That's John McCain. He wants to be Teddy Roosevelt. He wants to force you to love the American state. If you don't love the American state, well, the problem is you haven't been drafted yet. That'll fix your wagon. You'll love government then. Here's some more Ron Paul, the antidote to John McCain.
Is a Decision 2008 special, the Republican Presidential Candidates Debate, from the Kay Performing Arts Auditorium at Florida.
And then news, I promise. In Boca Raton.
Congressman Paul, you often have a different view of these issues, so I'll ask a vastly different question. Should government, in your view, have any role at all in stimulating the economy like this?
Well, sure, indirectly. They shouldn't stimulate it by interfering in the market rate of interest. That's where our basic problem comes from. And when you do that, you get in these problems, and then everybody wants to solve the problem by printing more money and spending more money and asking the Federal Reserve to, you know, lower interest rates. And that just makes the problem that much worse. The government does have a responsibility, but it's supposed to lower taxes, get rid of regulations, and devise a monetary policy that makes some sense. But to continue to say that we just appropriate more money, which is more deficit, and then expect us either to borrow it or expect the Federal Reserve to monetize it, it makes our problems worse. Just look at what's happening today. The dollar is crashing. And why? And Tim there suggests that we think of the economy, but not in foreign policy. You can't do that. They're one and the same. That's where all the money's going. We're spending nearly $1 trillion a year overseas maintaining this empire. And then there's never been a war fought without inflation and destruction and devaluation of a currency. And this is what we're doing today to ourselves, is we're literally spending ourselves into oblivion. But nobody here is willing to even suggest that we cut something overseas. But we have to. We don't need to cut anything here at home. I'd like to see things frozen. I'd like to see massive tax cuts. But we need deregulation. I was one of three people that voted against Sarbanes-Oxley. I knew that would be a problem, and it is a problem to the financial markets. So this is the kind of thing we need. We need the government out of the way, but it should have sound money, low taxes, less regulations, and a sensible policy where we're not wasting our money overseas.
Congressman, thank you.
The Wall Street Journal and NBC News asked people all across the country in our poll today, which party would be better in dealing with the economy? The Democrats had an 18-point advantage. With that in mind, and looking at the record over the last 7 years, the unemployment rate in 2001 was 4.2. It's now 5.0. The debt was $5.7 trillion. It's now $9.2 trillion. There was a $261 billion surplus. There's now a $250 billion deficit. Gas was $1.47 a gallon. It's now $3.02. Why should the American people continue a Republican in the White House with that kind of economic record?
Congressman Paul, please take 30 seconds of your own.
Well, you know, I think that we can't run on that program. I think what we have to run on is an old-fashioned Republican program. I can't be identified with this. I'm known as the taxpayer's best friend. I've never voted for a tax increase, and I voted for the least amount of spending, so I'm not part of that crowd. But what we need to do is reinstate Republican principles, then we could run on it, but we have drifted a long way from that, and that is because all these programs. But there was never my participation in this. I was waving a flag the whole time saying, slow up, slow up. This isn't going well. And here we are. We're at the verge of bankruptcy. We're moving into a new era, believe it or not. With the dollar in our economy and the world economy, this is a new era.
Congressman, time is up.
The Democratic nominee will go to the country and say, the war in Iraq is a bad idea, not worth the price in blood and treasure, and we should get out. I want each of you to take 30 seconds. Will you go to the country and say the war was a good idea, worth the price in blood and treasure, and we will stay? Congressman Paul, was the war a good idea, worth the blood and treasure that we have spent?
It was a very bad idea, and it wasn't worth it. The Al-Qaeda wasn't there then. They're there now. There were no weapons of mass destruction. Had nothing to do with 9/11. There was no aggression. This decision on policy was made in 1998 under the previous administration because they called for the removal of Saddam Hussein. It wasn't worth it. And it's a sad story because we started that war, and we should never be a country that starts war needlessly.
Dr. Paul, Congressman Paul, I'd like to talk about Social Security. The last time you ran for president and Libertarian Party candidate, you filled out a questionnaire asking about Social Security, and you said, quote, abolish it. There are 3.5 million people in Florida who rely on Social Security payments. Are you still in favor of abolishing Social Security?
Yes, but not overnight. Matter of fact, my program is the only one that is going to be able to take care of the elderly. I'd like to get the young people out. out of it, just in the next generation, because there's no money there. And they're going to have to pay 50 years and they're not going to get anything. There's no money there. Now, I'm saying I'd take care of all the elderly, all those who are dependent, but I would save the money from this wild spending overseas. We can save hundreds of billions of dollars and still take care of the elderly. Right now, they're getting behind, because they're having a 10 to 12% inflation rate, and we give them a 2% increase. So they're really hurting. I don't want taxes on the Social Security benefits that they receive. I have a bill in that would secure the trust fund where none of that money could be spent in the general revenues. So in many ways, though, the goal would be to get us out of this program that is a failure. It doesn't work and is going to bankrupt this country. That the only way you can do that is save enough money, tide the people over, let the young people get out. Because they're going to be paying all these years and they're not going to get anything. So ironically, I who defend the position that, you know, the federal government probably should have never been involved, I probably have the only program that would really help the elderly, because the way we're going now, the money's not going to be there. There's no way these cost of living increases are ever going to keep up with their benefits. They're never going to keep up with their cost of living. They're decreasing. I say my program has a better chance of helping them than any other one.
Congressman Paul, the other campaigns have said to you that their worry is that you won't stick to your party. If you look at yourself and see yourself someday as unelectable, perhaps you would launch a third party movement and hurt the Republicans.
My biggest concern is they won't stick to the party principles that Republicans stood for so long. And, you know, being conservative and balanced budgets and limited government and individual freedom. No, I have no intention of going into another party. I've been elected 10 times as a Republican. I was from a Republican family, and no, I don't plan to do that. I wish they would worry about it, you know, just in case. But no, I have no intention of doing that, but it might keep them on their toes. But no, I just think that the Republican Party has a problem because we don't act like Republicans. And we talked about this earlier, you know, that we're spending money that we don't have. We run up these deficits. In the old days, we used to be against the Department of Education. Now we doubled the size of it. No Child Left Behind. Even the Democrats are running against some of the things that we do. And they used to love that kind of stuff. And it used to be that we used to stop the wars. We stopped the Korean War. We were supposed to stop the Vietnam War that Democrats started. And here we're starting these wars. So that's why we've lost our way. So I don't think it's a matter of me leaving the Republican Party. If they would look toward what we're doing and the number of people who want to come into the party, they shouldn't be obstructing us. They should welcome. The party's getting smaller. Yet they say, oh, you're too strict on the Constitution. Why should us who believe strictly in the Constitution and rule of law be excluded? That's the way a lot of the people that gather around my candidacy think they're being treated. So I would say, why don't we have a big tent and welcome those of us who believe in liberty and believe in the Constitution? That's what it's all about, and that's what the Republican Party used to stand for.
Congressman, thank you. That will have to be the before we.
It is interesting to me that all the Republicans, other than Congressman Paul, would go into the fall election saying that the Iraq War was a good idea and worth the blood and treasure that has been spent on it. And I think that's going to be a really crystallized debate against either Senator Clinton or Senator Obama or Senator Edwards. And I think that's very healthy for the country.
Do you believe that they politically can do a 180 on that between now and in the fall? Having answered your question so directly, could they change positions through some method of argument, perhaps?
Boy, I think it's going to be very difficult. You know, they will say that Senator Clinton voted for the war. Senator Obama will say he was against it from the beginning. But once they have laid down that gauntlet and say, I mean, Governor Romney said, Democrats want to get out, we're not getting out. I think that's a very clear choice to the American people.
I got to interrupt. I'm sorry, Howard. You're great. Look at this. We asked you to take part in our tech survey and tell us who you thought won tonight's
Ron
Republican.
Paul.
I don't know why I'm looking at this down here. More than 15,000 you voted. 15,000 votes came in. Two big winners tonight, Romney and Ron Paul. I love it. It shows our wonderful tapestry.
They were in the
diversity.
Hall, by the way. The Ron Paul people are packed in the hall tonight.
I think the Ron Paul people are legion. And I think I heard the applause tonight, by the way. Strong anti-war sentiment in the Republican hall tonight. I guess there are a lot of non-
That was the Ron Paul people.
The Ron Paul crowd. Here it is, also in single digits, by the way. Huckabee down at 8, McCain at 7, Rudy at 4. But the big winners tonight, the men at two ends of the spectrum, the anti-establishment libertarian, Ron Paul, and the very establishmentarian, Mitt Romney.
Alright, folks, it's Anti-War Radio on Chaos 95.9 in Austin, Texas. I'm Scott Horton. Thanks for listening to the show today. Let's see, got some news. Iraq war killed a million, says survey. Now, this is, what's the name of this group again? Opinion Research Business out of the UK, and we have tentative arrangements to have one of the statisticians who did the study on the show for you here tomorrow. You might remember the same group came out and said that a million Iraqis had been killed in the war a few months back. And I was trying to get them on the show then, but they said, you know what? We wanted to go back and make sure. We wanted to tighten up our statistical sample and our methodology and so forth a little bit, go back and get some more numbers done. So why don't you get back to us when we're done with that? Well, now they're done with that. They claim that their numbers still stand. A million Iraqis have died in this war. Oh, funny. The United Nations just said it was 100-something thousand. A few weeks back. The Lancet and Johns Hopkins University says 655,000 back in October of 2006. I don't know who's right, do you? I don't know. But, boy, it sure does put to the lie George Bush's claim, particularly in his Cincinnati speech in 2002, that the greatest beneficiaries of this war will be the Iraqi people. That's right. We're going to liberate them. They're not going to have to suffer under the tyranny of Saddam Hussein anymore. Well, they'll be dead instead. We will kill them, liberate them from the confines of their flesh and bodies that, you know, keep them grounded here on Earth. You know, we'll liberate them from their lives. 5 million refugees. Water and electricity still at lower levels than before the war. Yeah, for those listening on MP3 decades from now, it's 2008. And the water and electricity still at levels below they were below where they were when the war broke out. 5 million refugees. Oh, New York Times. Oh, my God. 5,000 people have come to Baghdad from wherever they were. Look, everyone's coming home because of how great the security situation is. No, those are Shia who were purged from the Anbar province. Have nowhere else to go but the newly, high 80-something or low 90-something percent Shiite city of Baghdad. They have nowhere else to go. And yes, the Syrian government has started turning people back and started kicking people out. So there are refugees who are being forced out of Syria who are returning. Oh, all credit to the Saint Petraeus. According to the New York Times. According to others. Oh, I'm sorry. According to the Pentagon. THonline.com, what the hell is that? Well, here's an argument for getting all my windows open before the show. Because now, what? You're not going to open the page? Great. Oh, here we go. THonline.com, whatever the hell that is. This is an Associated Press article, so it doesn't matter. AP, weapons the U.S. provides to Iraqi security forces might still be ending up in the hands of terrorists, insurgents, and criminals, the Defense Department Inspector General told Congress on Tuesday. Oh. Huh. Well, now, certainly he's not saying that the Saint Petraeus, who Jesus sent down here from heaven for our sins, a man who John McCain thinks anyone who criticizes him ought to be deported, stripped of their citizenship and deported from this country. That commie rat, John McCain. It couldn't be that he's giving weapons to terrorists and criminals. He's Jesus. Things that he does don't ever go wrong. Don't ever have unintended consequences. They can't. Or else I'd have to criticize him. And I can't. Weapons the U.S. provides to Iraqi security forces are still ending up in the hands of terrorists, insurgents, and criminals, the Defense Department Inspector General told Congress on Tuesday. While U.S. commanders have made progress in controlling the flow of tens of thousands of munitions into Iraq, there still remains work to be accomplished. Claude Kicklighter said in prepared remarks obtained by the Associated Press, appearing behind closed doors for a briefing before the House Appropriations Defense Subcommittee. Kicklighter said his office received complaints nearly a year ago from Turkish officials that weapons intended for Iraq's growing military and police forces were being used by militant groups in Turkey. We were also beginning to find some weapons that the U.S. had supplied to Iraqi security forces were in the hands and control of insurgent groups and U.S. contractors in Iraq, he said. Investigators found that a contractor implicated in a bribery scheme in Kuwait had a contract to run a warehouse where weapons for Iraq's police force were stored. Based on that information, Defense Secretary Robert Gates directed Kicklighter to examine how much oversight U.S. authorities had over the weapons bought with U.S. tax dollars. In a July report, the GAO said that until December 2005, U.S. commanders in Iraq had no centralized sets of records for the shipping of weapons to Iraqi forces. And on and on. So there you go. America arming all sides, our friends and our enemies and everybody in Iraq, because they don't know what the hell to do except just arm everybody. And the Turks, yeah, they've been our friends and allies in NATO for 50 years, but if we have to arm the terrorist groups that are killing civilians in Turkey, well, so be it. Hey, they're part of the security forces, the Kurdish Peshmergas. What are we supposed to do? You know? I guess we could do like we're doing with Iran. We could arm Iran's allies and then just blame them for everything that our allies do. We could, I guess, do that with the Turks. Turkey, it's your fault that we're arming people who are attacking you. It's, I don't know. Does Turkey have any allies in Iraq? I guess that scheme wouldn't work quite right. They would need some allies in Iraq, which I guess they don't have. Afghanistan, that's what George Bush calls it. Afghanistan. Yeah, over there in Afghanistan. It's going to take a lot of work. It's hard work over there. Yeah. Well, Hamid Karzai, our puppet dictator there, says more troops probably won't help. The Prime Minister of Canada has told George Bush he's ready to quit this thing. And U.S. studies fear Afghan decline to terrorist haven. Huh. So I guess all I have to do is just forget all the bullshit that I've heard for 7 years straight about Afghanistan. Oh, Afghanistan's the model. Afghanistan, it's the other white war. It's awesome. Yeah, Afghanistan. Yeah, it's too bad Iraq isn't going so well. But in Afghanistan, that's the real war there. No, it's not. They never did go to war against Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. Maybe they got... Actually, I don't know. Bob Dreyfus says they did, that they killed a whole shitload of Al-Qaeda guys in November 2001. But the war against Al-Qaeda has stopped since then. There's no war against Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. It's a war of occupation, of colonial administration. And in this case, our Quisling is Hamid Karzai. And yeah, he's no more the dictator of Afghanistan than I am. Nor will he ever be. And the American occupation of Afghanistan will end in defeat and humiliation and failure, just like every other empire's invasion of Afghanistan in history before, with no exceptions. Afghanistan is the land where empires die. Why not quit? Why not just come home? Why not say, what the fuck are we doing backing the Tajiks and the Uzbek warlords in their civil war against the Pashtuns? How in the fuck is this the responsibility of some kid from Nebraska or Alabama or Texas or Colorado? It's our job to do what? To create modernity in Afghanistan? Oh, well, you know, that's the lesson of the Afghan jihad of the 1980s, is after they drove the, after we helped them drive the Russians out, we should have taken the Russians' place. Then everything would have been fine. Then 9/11 would have never happened if only we had extended our empire into the space left by the Russians immediately. Oh, you know what we'd have done? Yeah, we'd have built schools for the little girls and electricity lines. Yeah. As though the Mujahideen guys that we had helped kick the Russians out weren't kicking the Russians out for exactly that. Coming and bringing them modernity. Electric lines and schools for little girls. That's one thing you gotta give the commies credit, man. They're not sexist. That's what the Soviets came to do in Afghanistan. Oh yeah, we're gonna give them modernity. We're gonna educate the little girls and build electric wires and stuff. It'll be great. Yeah, they didn't seem to think so. And with American help, they kicked the Russians out. And if America had stayed, they would have kicked us out a long time ago. And all the little girls who'd gone to the American schools that we had created would all been killed by now for doing so. So now we've just done it later. We just put off that occupation, that taking the Russians' place in Afghanistan for a decade or so. And now we're filling that spot. And now we're educating the little girls and building electric lines. And our occupation, our remaking of Afghanistan will end in failure, just like the Russians' occupation did. Oh, but don't worry, we'll have some great photo opportunities of Laura Bush over there celebrating how great everything is for the women. Why, I even forgot that the reason that we let these guys have a war in Afghanistan was to kill the guys who did 9/11. Bin Laden and Zawahiri and their pals. Huh, I almost forgot. Here, you just went over there to liberate the women, because Americans love women and liberty so much that we just go over all around the place killing those who would oppress women and liberating them instead. Yes, don't worry. America will leave Afghanistan in humiliation and defeat and bankruptcy one day, but we'll have some great photo opportunities of Laura Bush and all the cute little girls in their cute little schools to think back on when we feel like getting nostalgic. Oh, gee, remember when Afghanistan was the good war? Remember when Afghanistan was anything but a killing field because that's what TV said? Miss those days. Recently, people been sentenced to death by the American puppet government in Afghanistan for nothing. One guy read a book. What was it? He read a book that said that, how come Muslim men can have a bunch of wives, but the wives can't have a bunch of husbands? Obvious question. Something a four-year-old would ask or something, probably. Huh, how come it's this way, but not the opposite, too? I don't understand. Well, they're going to kill this guy now. Yeah, he's being sentenced to death. And the Afghan parliament said, good. Just like the guy who converted to Christianity a couple years back. Remember that? Huh. Wow, Christianity. Cool. I think I'll believe in this now. They sentenced him to death. People came and helped him escape, I guess, to England or something. That's the good guys. Those are the wonderful liberal Democrats that have been stalled in power in Afghanistan by the United States. Aren't you proud? Aren't you just tearing up with pride for your country, which is indistinguishable from Christ, which goes around slaughtering people by the millions? You realize we've more than doubled in Iraq the death toll from Rwanda. You realize that? They call that a genocide when the Hutus turned on the Tutsis. And 400,000 people were slaughtered. America's better than doubled that in Iraq since 2003. Oh, boy, I can feel the tears welling up in my eyes right now in anticipation of the next time I hear the national anthem. Because I am just, my bosom is so swollen with pride, I can barely contain it. We've done to Iraq what the Russians did to Afghanistan. Our violence in Afghanistan is nowhere near the level of mass murder perpetrated by the Soviet Union there. Oh, but that's okay, because we've perpetrated that level of violence in Iraq. So we're still just as fucking bad as the USSR. Just as bad as the USSR. Oh, yeah, but everything's fine in my neighborhood. Yeah, well, you don't live under American occupation. You're the part of the combine whose job it is to go to work and then give half your money to the state so that they can spend that money buying munitions so that they can do all this slaughtering and all this acting like the Soviet Union. See? You were confused if you thought that you had to live in an absolute police state yourself. See? They gotta leave you free enough that you can actually produce stuff so that they can suck off of you and take the real wealth that you create and spend it slaughtering people. So don't tell me that America's not like the Soviet Union. It is too. It's an evil empire that goes around murdering people. You know, murder. The first thing in the world that you learn is the unpardonable sin. It's wrong for one human life to put an end to another, but in the most desperate act of self-defense. Do you remember as a little kid learning that to kill is wrong? Thou shalt not kill. Murder is murder, and murder is bad. And that's why we're putting this guy in an electric chair and electrocuting him to death, because he murdered somebody. And we don't put up with that shit. Oh, except for war. We ever mentioned to you that war is great, and that if government hires you, and you're a government employee, then murder is wonderful. Murder is how you bring people liberty. Murder is how you prevent terrorism. Smashing a society into a million pieces and creating 5 million refugees and a million rotting corpses is great, is wonderful, is different somehow than just plain old private murder. You can see the red, white, and blue waving in front of your eyes right now, right? That's what makes it all good. That's what makes it all okay. Ask John McCain. Say, hey, John McCain, you know, the murder statutes in the various states, the 50 states, they all have these murder statutes that make it a crime for people to kill people, right? Are you for repealing those? Or do you believe that it's a crime to murder people? Maybe it's only okay, John McCain, for you to murder people if they believe exactly like you do, like the North Vietnamese under Ho Chi Minh. Then it's okay to murder them. Is that it? No. I guarantee you, you know, lock John McCain in a room somewhere, handcuff him to a chair, make him answer, and he'll tell you the difference. The difference is, when you work for the government, it is not only okay, but is in fact good and decent and honorable and valorous and glorious and important to murder people. Without state murder, where would we be? That's John McCain's answer. Of course thou shalt not kill unless you're a government employee, in which case you ought to kill millions of people. You ought to create millions of refugees. You ought to drop high explosives on the houses of people while they're eating their family dinner. Then it's perfectly fine. Anybody else have any other explanation? That's the answer. It depends whose name is on the top of your paycheck. Is it a private company or is it the government? And if it's a private company, do they have a contract from the DOD or not? If they have a contract from the DOD, then murder's okay if it's a private company too. I almost forgot my, you know, mercenary technicality there. As long as it's tax money paying your bill, then you can kill people. Which makes me wonder, you know, as far as the technicalities go in the law and everything, what if you're like on a survey crew and your job is surveying the side of the road, say for Texas 130? Well, that's government money, right? I mean, you're working for a private survey company, but that private survey company has a government contract. Does that mean now it's perfectly okay for you to murder whoever you want? Or is that, I guess, only if they're foreigners? I'm trying to nail down the technicalities here. I'm just looking for a little bit of consistency on when it's okay to be a murderer. You know, like our hero, Hamid Karzai, whose government goes around murdering people. Or Nouri al-Maliki, or whoever's the most recent head of the concerned local citizens since the last guy got killed over there in the Anbar province. Murder, wrong. Murder while in the employ of the state, perfectly fine. Just so we got that straight. Khalilzad. Remember Khalilzad? He was Karzai's handler. Khalilzad was the guy, the ambassador to Afghanistan. He was the guy who told Hamid Karzai what to do every day. You know, Zalmay Khalilzad, the student of Leo Strauss. Zalmay Khalilzad, who helped Scooter Libby and Paul Wolfowitz write the Defense Planning Guidance in 1992. Zalmay Khalilzad, lobbyist for UNICAL. You know, Zalmay Khalilzad, who, after being ambassador to Afghanistan, was made the ambassador to Iraq and came out with the plan back in 2005. It's time to ditch the Iranians we've been backing this whole time and start backing the Sunnis, the Baathists, the dead-enders, the terrorists. It's time for us to redirect toward the Sunni Arabs and against those who won the purple-fingered election. That's what Zalmay Khalilzad came up with back in 2005, the exact strategy that's being implemented now. You know, Zalmay Khalilzad, the Straussian, the neocon, the UNICAL executive, the ambassador to Afghanistan and Iraq. Well, he was in Davos, Switzerland. I don't know if it was the World Economic Forum. Is that thing going on again? And somehow he sat on a panel near the Iranian and got in big trouble. Seriously. U.S. envoy, high-level guy, Zalmay Khalilzad. He's a, you know, draws a lot of water. from the LA Times. U.S. envoy debates Iranians a no-no. America's sometimes freewheeling ambassador to the UN. Oh, I forgot he's the ambassador to the UN now. Ran afoul of his superiors by taking part in an unauthorized debate with two high-ranking Iranian officials during a conference of world leaders last week in the luxury Alpine resort of Davos, Switzerland. Zalmay Khalilzad made an unscheduled appearance Saturday at the World Economic Forum discussion of Iran's controversial nuclear program, whose participants included Manitur Mottaki and Mojtaba Samir Hashemi, a top advisor to President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Khalilzad did not veer from the U.S. position, but broke rules that permit Bush administrations to discuss issues with Iranians only under limited circumstances with advance approval. Ambassador Khalilzad's appearance with the Iranian foreign minister and presidential advisor was not authorized, said a State Department spokesman who declined to be identified while discussing a personnel issue. He said officials would speak to Khalilzad about the infraction. Video of the 78-minute discussion has been posted on the World Economic Forum website and on YouTube, but State Department officials were taken by surprise when they received questions about it Tuesday afternoon. My goodness. Everybody knows that American government employees are forbidden from having a discussion of any kind with the Iranians until they capitulate to all our demands first. Only then can negotiations begin. Everyone knows that. What you say? They're enriching uranium to 3.6%, which is absolutely and completely harmless and openly declared to the UN inspectors and couldn't possibly be used to make a bomb, even if you got Jose Padilla to put it in a bucket and swing it over his head. What you say? Oh, they have to stop that before negotiations can begin. Because, you know, we just can't have them within 10 or 15 years of the knowledge necessary to begin to construct atomic weapons, which they apparently have no intention of doing at all. You're in deep, deep trouble, Mr. Khalilzad. Mr. Big Shot. You're not allowed to talk to anyone in the employ of the Iranian government until they capitulate to all of our demands first. Understood? This is the empire we're trying to maintain here, okay? We don't go around talking to people. We threaten them. Gaza news. I'm sorry I haven't covered this. There's so much Gaza news. I don't know what's going to happen. Does anybody know what's going to happen in Gaza? I guess I'd like to see at this point Egypt go ahead and say, fine, we'll just make it a province, which I don't think they want to do. They don't want to have to deal with Hamas either. They don't want to have to deal with the Palestinians. And, of course, Mubarak, does he want anything that isn't just whatever D.C. tells him? I don't know if Hosni Mubarak has any will of his own. But so there you go. The Gazans have been allowed. They tore down the wall, the Israeli-built border, and rushed into Egypt. They haven't been allowed all the way into Egypt, but just into parts of the Sinai Peninsula, and have been allowed to trade, to buy food and medicine and so forth. And, of course, America, again, has thwarted a UN resolution condemning the Israelis for their brutality. Not that the UN Security Council should exist, has any authority whatsoever, or anything along those lines. But still, it's just nice to know, you know, as an example, there's the entire Security Council saying, what in the hell are you people doing? And it's always only comes down to the U.S. defending the absolutely undefendable. It's crazy. Also, soldier suicides are at record levels. You know, our enemies, they are willing to kill themselves to kill us. That's what they call altruistic suicide, like your Uncle Jack who jumped on a grenade to save his friends in Vietnam. altruistic suicide. That's what that's called. Willing someone, you know, who jumps out in the street to push the lady and the kid out of the way and instead gets hit by the truck himself. That's altruistic suicide. That's what the suicide terrorists are doing. Doesn't make it right. Doesn't negate the fact that they're killing civilians when they do so. In most cases. But that's not the same as despair. That's not the same as, I just can't take it anymore, I want to kill myself. Which, you know, government, of course, wants us to believe that that's why people do this. That's why we have to invade them, to give them peace and democracy and prosperity, so that they won't be so poor and helpless. Well, it turns out all the suicide bombers, at least in Al-Qaeda, the guys who have attacked us, all of them upper middle class, graduate students, capable, wealthy, well-educated people with a future. They don't kill themselves out of sadness and despair. That's why our guys kill themselves. You're confusing two issues. U.S. veteran suicides are at an all-time high right now. Honor, glory, valor, duty, Jesus. Fighting for freedom. No, no. Fighting for colonial domination, and then the day when I guess so many of these guys realize that they've lost so much for such a bad purpose, for such faulty purpose, that they're eating their service, you know, their 45s. They're killing themselves at record rates. American soldiers are killing themselves. And of course, you know, so many of them have the mental trauma and the brain injuries too from the shockwaves and so forth. Now the government's passing a law based on the Virginia Tech shooting that says, oh, if you're crazy, you can't buy a gun. Which means any soldier who wants treatment for his post-traumatic stress disorder, his shell shock, will be denied his right to bear arms. And any soldier who wants to keep his right to bear arms will have to avoid seeking treatment for his post-traumatic stress. God damn. Somebody play a patriotic song. I feel like crying. Chaos Radio 95.9. See you guys here tomorrow. Hey, everybody donate $50 to Ron Paul tomorrow. $51. It's the next money bomb. All right, thanks for listening. Chaos Radio 95.9 in Austin.
Gates of hell tonight. No, I'll be knocking at the gates of hell tonight.